From Lookout Mountain, above Golden, Colorado, getting ready for the ambitious autism ride in June. Welcome to the GCN Show. See you in June, Dan.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, why lots of people are making a fundamental mistake with cycling, focusing on power, not speed.
We dive into why some of the most physiologically gifted riders never get the results you'd expect, whilst others with less power are amongst the world's best.
Plus, we've got cycling glasses with built-in AI, why we now get to use Filippo Ganna's wheels, and the catch-22 of cycling safety.
And an update you've all been waiting for. More knitting while cycling.
Scarves this time, just like you.
This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that Tadej Pogacar is human. His invincibility force field wore off in the finale of Strade Bianche on Saturday, unfortunately halfway through a corner.
Oh, road rash and a thorn bush for good measure. Now, admittedly, the invincibility force field did kick back in soon after because he still won the race anyway, beating Tom Pidcock.
Who also, it has to be said, displayed extraterrestrial levels of ability by staying upright in the same corner where Pogacar crashed.
Yeah, he's sort of defying the laws of physics there.
It's
somehow,
isn't it?
And yeah, insane levels of cool-headedness.
I will have more from Strade Bianche in a bit, including the newest, hottest rivalry that you need to know about.
Oh, yes. And now, meanwhile, we also learned that while we often assume that GCN is discussed by world leaders and policymakers alike, there was proof last week in the Houses of Parliament here in the UK.
So it turns out that the lack of free-to-view Tour de France from next year onwards, plus the increased price of viewing all racing here in the UK, was a matter for parliamentary debate. And according to the honorary Benno Bees-Jecty, GCN Plus provided almost unlimited access to the global cycling calendar. Cycling boards like me had never had it so good.
How cool is that?
It's amazing.
Like, genuinely, yeah. I think we need to meet this guy.
That would be nice, wouldn't
it? Totally, yeah. What a legend. Now, finally this week, we learned that speed, not power, is what wins races.
I thought it was dirty faces.
Well, yeah, dirty faces win races, that is true, but it's kind of not what we were chatting about at the coffee machine this morning.
No, I just thought I'd throw in a curveball there.
Oh,
back to the coffee machine chat. This week, when I was reminiscing about Alpecin De Koenig team manager Christoph Rodehoft, back when we were filming the Zwift Academy.
You had that special time together where you made him laugh.
Exactly that. I was proud of that, to be fair, but I was more thinking of something that he'd said in the team car. Rather than paraphrase it, though, it's probably best you hear it from the man himself.
And I'm guessing you must have seen a lot of riders who have very good physiology and very good power numbers, but they're not able to compete at the top level because they're using too much energy to be in position.
Being let's say, an economical rider is also a big advantage, and it's not trainable in the end, or almost not trainable.
Who was the most economical rider when you were racing?
Oh, I have no idea, but...
don't laugh.
In our team now, Gianni Vermeers for sure is one of them.
Yeah.
He finds himself a way into the final of a classic on his way, without the numbers on paper.
Without the biggest engine.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden he's there. And we have also seen that Mathieu won Strade, and that the second and the third and the fourth had way bigger numbers than he had, but that he was also very economically during the day because of the surface then in the end. So it's a thing. And it's a lot of free watts or energy that you can take there or lose.
Do you think there was a period in pro cycling 3, 4, 5 years ago where there was too much attention only on the numbers, and now it's reversed back to being you have to have the complete package?
But I think it has always been the case that you needed the complete package, but everybody is looking now for the hidden talent, I think.
Yeah.
And because of Strava and all these things. Nobody talks about speed anymore. They only talk about output.
That is super interesting, isn't it? So Van der Poel is not only incredibly powerful, but much more efficient than most of his peers. You kind of wouldn't have thought that, would you?
No, precisely. And there was definitely a time when, as Christoph mentioned there, there was too much emphasis on power and potential and not enough on speed. That is probably about to change in the pro ranks, but lots of us have forgotten about it as well.
Yeah, we have, yeah. So history, we think, is about to repeat itself again. So in racing, I mean, if you think back 20 years ago now, like how were riders recruited and recompensed?
Through their results on the road.
Exactly. Results are entirely down to speed, aren't they? The faster you cover a course compared to your rivals, whether that's a time trial or a road race, I mean, gravel didn't exist 20 years ago, but cyclocross and mountain biking did, the faster you went, the better the result.
And when you put it so simply, you wonder why things ever veered away from that. But I think we need to kind of explain, don't we? So power meters changed everything in cycling. Initially, they were only used by a few and normally just in training, but eventually they were adopted by pretty much every pro rider. And the more riders that used them, the more data points there were for comparison. And suddenly, everyone was out there trying to improve their power to weight and their FTP.
You and I amongst them.
Along with pretty much everyone else.
Yeah, yeah, and with good reason, right? Because as any sports psychologist will tell you, you can only focus on your own performance, can't you? And then finally, in cycling, we're able to quantify it.
True. But then, the next step. Power meters became so commonplace, even juniors were using them. And so pro teams were scouting riders not just for their results out on the road, but for their physiological output.
Yeah, trying to discover the next hidden gem.
Exactly. Riders with incredible raw power, but perhaps without the necessary skills or tactical nous yet to translate that power into results.
We were a bit too old for that, weren't we? Yeah. That's why.
That's why we got missed out.
We weren't discovered, yeah. I mean, it's going on now, though, isn't it? It's like, such is the emphasis placed on talent ID that riders are getting contracts straight out of the junior ranks based as much on their power profile and laboratory as their results, basically. Now, in the past, we've seen that it's worked for some, haven't we? But yeah, for others, the numbers never really translated into results.
No, for quite a few. And one rider that springs to my mind is Ollie Jones. He won the first ever Men's Zwift Academy, which was in 2017, getting a chance then with Team Dimension data on the road. However, his results that year didn't really live up to expectations, despite the raw power he had.
Mm. But isn't he the guy that beat Matthew Van Der Poel in the Zwift race, in the Zwift Academy, episode 3 a couple of weeks back?
The very same man, yes. And he was right up there too at the Zwift Games sprint races last Saturday. Alive on GCN Racing, by the way, for the next two Saturdays as well.
Seamless plug. Damn.
Always the pro.
Yeah.
And then there's also Jason Osborne, world esports champion, who went pro with Alpecin and also didn't really get the results.
Isn't he in the Zwift Games as well?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, Si. Yes, he is. And there's Ailey Gardner, potentially the fastest climber on the planet. She dabbled in road racing, but stepped away from it eventually without any major results.
She's in the Zwift Games as well.
Funnily enough, Si, she is.
Yeah.
That is worth watching.
Well, yes, a stacked field, isn't it? Yeah. Some proper hitters there.
Anyway, the big question is, why? What do numbers not always translate into real-world performance? It's easy to think that if you're aero enough, light enough, and powerful enough, there's no reason why the results wouldn't come with it. So what are the other key ingredients of a successful racer?
I mean, there's a few, aren't there? More than a few, but a lot of them relate to efficiency, don't they? So first up, momentum. Often overlooked as part of a good racing pedigree. The reason that Matthew Van Der Poel was able to win Strada Bianca with a lower power output compared to his closest rivals was probably down to his bike handling.
Almost undoubtedly. I'll never forget watching Paris-Roubaix. Was it 2021 in the mud there? The first one in a couple of years. He didn't actually win that day, but on every wet corner, he was putting lengths into the riders he was with. Through one isolated corner, it's not going to make much difference, but you have to close a gap and get back up to speed through hundreds of corners in a race. I think there's a decent chance you're going to pay for those efforts later in the race.
Yeah. Also, when he won last year, do you remember the pictures of his hands that were completely unblemished? Yeah. Everyone else was covered in blisters, apart from Van Der Poel.
Yeah.
It looked like, yeah, divine intervention or something. And now, the other crucial part of efficiency is positioning, isn't it? Now, it is very hard to see on a television screen, but when you're in a bunch, you notice that there are some people that just seem to be able to float around without ever breaking, and they're always in the right place at the right time.
It is a real skill, isn't it? Some people have it, some people don't. And to again refer to what Christoph said there in the team car, it's also something very difficult to learn.
Yeah, a little bit like technical ability, right? If you lack positioning skills, you're going to be using energy unnecessarily throughout a race. So every time you hit the brakes, you're going to have to put extra power through the pedals to get back up to speed. Or every time you're out of position at a crucial moment, you're having to use your power to close that gap. And that all adds up over the course of a 5 or 6 hour race.
Yeah. So there's no doubt that physiology is the most crucial component of a successful stage racer. Without it, you're not going to be able to compete. But if you want to be the best of the best, you need to be the complete package.
Yeah. Unless you're Mark Cavendish.
Oh, yeah.
He is famous for two things, of course. Winning more Tour de France stages than anyone ever, and also not being particularly gifted when measured in a lab, or even on the road with a power meter, he defied physics too.
I would say he's probably famous for more than just those two things.
Well, okay, yeah.
We'll roll with that for the sake of proving our point here.
Yeah, so let's roll with it. But how do you think things are going to change then?
I kind of think they already have to a degree. So there's a good reason that both Alpecin and Canyon-SRAM wanted to test the finalists on their speed around those go-kart tracks in the Zwift Academy finals. They realise that power is nothing without the skill to go with it. And I think there'll be more scepticism when it comes to young riders with an abundance of power, but not many results to show for it.
Yeah, I also think that the way riders train, might change a little bit as well. So I spoke to a sports director last year, I think, who told me that he was asking his riders when training to focus on speed in certain sessions rather than power. So simply trying to go faster, basically.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense, really.
I mean, it does, doesn't it, really?
I mean, I'm not sure if it's something I'd want my well-paid riders in my team to do out on the open road with other cars on it. But it is a good way of reinforcing what they're paid to do at the race, isn't it? Which is to go fast, you know, get the results. Because there's no prizes for the best power output. The prizes are for the results that you get or that your teammates get.
Although, wasn't there a time when riders were getting onto a team bus after a race and they would still be happy even if they got dropped because they put out a PB power?
I've heard the same thing, yeah. I mean, that was a bit after our time, I think.
It was, yeah.
But anyway, having said all of this, our viewers, I'd imagine, are probably wondering how it relates to them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting, right? Purely as a pro cycling subject. But I guess how it relates to all of us lot depends very much on your personal aim. So if it is to be fitter, then speed doesn't really matter, does it? Now, as you pointed out in your series last year, for example, VO2 max has a big correlation with your health span, but you can have a high VO2 max without being aero or efficient
that
or even
true,
going
yeah.
fast.
But on the other hand, if you do like to go fast, and who doesn't, riding the same local loop over and over can be a really interesting experiment. How fast can you go for the same power, whilst ensuring you ride safely, of course, by improving your cornering or your momentum through different parts of that loop?
It doesn't sound like an interesting experiment, riding the same loop over and over again, but
well,
I do know what you mean.
Yeah,
exactly. We also know, don't we, that average speed is really important as a metric to lots of you lot. Now, whether that's being able to average 30k an hour or 20 mile an hour or 34k an hour, whatever it is, focusing on your speed rather than your fitness will, surprise, surprise, pay dividends.
There's some really easy wins out there, isn't there? So applying power where it's going to make the biggest difference, or keeping that momentum through corners.
Yeah, not stopping at red lights. I'm kidding. Always stop at red lights. Now, the one thing against speed, though, Dan, is tech, okay? Because, of course, you can buy speed and lots of it, can't you? From fast inner tubes to fast socks. Everything and anything can seemingly make you faster. But power is absolute, isn't it? So for me, actually having it as a metric, it's kind of more satisfying in many respects than speed, because it's a better reflection of the effort that I've put in rather than the wax that I've put on my chain.
I get that, yeah, that is true. But as we said, it kind of depends on your aim, doesn't it? If I was you though, at your age, Si, focusing on buying speed might keep you going for a few more years yet. Kind of sort of stop the rot, stop the decline.
Dan?
No comeback?
No. Yeah, good. No, I haven't really got one, actually. It was probably a bit close to the mark.
Anyway, let us know your thoughts there at home. Do you think about speed and efficiency or fitness? Have you ever ridden with someone who is just super efficient or incredibly strong but who always gets dropped? Let us know in the comments down below. Who was the most efficient rider that you ever rode with or raced with, Si?
Well, that's a good question, that. I mean, we've spoken about him many times in the past over the course of GCN, a former British national road race champ, Rob Hales, who was like so far ahead of the game when it came to aerodynamics and everything else. Mm. He was about as efficient as it got.
He was good, wasn't he? He was also a bit of a watt monster. He was a big guy.
Well, he was, yeah. But it was how he deployed his watts. What about you, mate?
I'm sure there were quite a few very efficient riders. One that springs to mind is probably the Belgian Nick Noyens. I think a lot of people watching this have probably never heard of Nick Noyens, but he actually won the Tour of Flanders back in 2011. Didn't have the biggest engine, but my word, could that guy hide in the peloton? I mean, he was canny. And I love that type of rider. You know, you don't get them quite as much anymore, but they are still out there. And I also say that Marianne Vos looks like a rider whose wins have come almost as much because of how efficient and clever she is on a bike and in racing as how powerful she is.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, she is definitely one of the canniest riders we've ever seen. I'd love to know, actually, how much power she does produce. Like, how big is her engine compared to the
kind of
results?
It's probably quite big still.
I mean, you'd think it would be, right? But equally, she's just so consistent.
Mm. I mean, well, she's got everything, hasn't she? She must have a really good engine. But with over 250 wins to her name, it's got to be the complete package. The engine, the nous, the tactical nous, etc., positioning, it's the whole package rolled into one.
Yeah. That's what people used to say about you.
I haven't got a response either. A touche.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with a bit of tech that we spotted on PC Magazine, of all places. It is the Bleak Up Ranger glasses, which promise to be AI-powered cycling glasses with a built-in camera, voice assistant, and audio speakers.
Currently at the crowdfunding stage, this one doesn't seem to involve OnlyFans, side, does it? But we can't actually find the price on their website, so do go carefully out there.
Yeah, I mean, they look cool, but yeah, there's also no mention of weight in them as well. That would be good to know. I wouldn't want like to have like a GoPro hanging off your nose. But anyway, I can definitely see a target audience for them.
Probably fans of RoboCop.
Yes, exactly that. And Cycling Mikey as well. And now before we leave tech news for this week, we've got some super exciting news from here at GCN as well. We are delighted to say that we're partnering up with Princeton Carbon Works and P1 Technologies, adding their bonkersly nice and redonkulously fast wheels to our fleet.
Redonkulously.
Oh yeah, I just made that one up.
You're probably familiar with their wavy profiled wheels, gracing some of the fastest bikes in the world, be that road, track, time trial, triathlon, or even mountain bike. With Ineos Grenadiers, they racked up two men's world hour records, 43 time trial wins.
44, as of yesterday.
Oh, yes, Ghana, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Two of which were world championships.
Yes, and then with their sister brand, P1 Technologies, they've also helped claim both the men's and the women's Olympic mountain bike titles.
Quite the list, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Let's hope they can work similar wonders for your Manchester to London ride, because you will need all the help you can get.
Well, no, not anymore, so. I got 12th in a Zwift race last week.
12th? Out of 12?
No, 13.
All right.
Actually, no, it was out of 97, believe it or not.
No.
Cat C.
Out of 97 riders, you came 12th in a Zwift race.
I did, yeah. I was canny. And now, last week, we talked about the pressure on race organisers for increased safety following a few incidents in the last couple of months. While calls have been made for race organisers to be hit with sanctions for any lapses, here is the flip side.
Yes, so this is a story from here in the UK. The governing body, British Cycling, are clearly trying to up their game and improve safety in UK road races, which I think we can all agree is a good thing, right? But it means that organisers are having to implement these safety changes and ultimately foot the bill.
To the extent to which one long-standing race, the Active Fakenham Crit, won't be going ahead due to needing an additional £4,000 to meet British Cycling standards.
Yeah. It's a catch-22, isn't it? On the one hand, we're demanding safety, well, reasonably expecting safety. On the other hand, we can't afford it.
It's getting increasingly costly year on year, isn't it?
It is,
especially
yeah.
in the UK. Speaking of safety, we've been covering the issues facing Toronto-based bike riders under the Doug Ford administration. And reading your comments left underneath last week's show and the weeks before, I think, with quite some interest because there's been quite a few of them.
Yes, so two from last week. This one's from Raf5604. He says, lives in Toronto, road cycles and mountain bikes. In fact, he's got 8 bikes and loves cycling. That said, here in Toronto, he says, we're not against bike lanes. We're against absolutely poorly designed and implemented bike lanes. We have an invitation to go to Toronto to experience these bike lanes.
Yeah, all expenses paid.
Raf, let us know. anyway, one in particular that I think we mentioned last week, he said he couldn't believe how dangerous and stupidly designed it is, whereas some of them work all right. So basically, the moral of that comment was bad design should not be ignored just because the principle is just.
I can go along with that, I think. But there's also this one that we saw come in from Cameron Fraser. He said, a small bit of trivia, re Doug Ford and the Ontario election. Unfortunately, Ford won another majority, so the bike lanes are still in peril, but the member of provincial parliament who introduced the legislation to remove the bike lanes lost his seat.
Well, that sounds quite positive, doesn't it? I mean, not for him, but still. We also talked last week about the bike-powered sock knitting machine.
Oh, yes.
In
onto
Japan.
That?
Yes. Of course, the Netherlands got there first, Dan. So according to Gilbert Tang, a Dutch designer named George Barrett Jones created the Cyclone Knitter in 2018 to help people knit scarves at train stations.
And lo and behold, he's not wrong. Here you go.
Look at that!
I know.
What a machine.
And lastly, Sherry Aguinar responded to the news about a trial in Denver, Colorado. You remember where people were paid to cycle. She said they're already getting paid €200 a month to commute by bike in Belgium. Apparently, it's capped, though, to 20 kilometres a day.
€200 a month?
Not bad,
to ride? Absolutely, yeah. More of that, please.
Quick maths.
In fact,
€2,400 a year, so it took me a little while.
That's not bad,
no?
Is it? Yeah, I bet that would convince more than a few people to get on their bikes. In fact, maybe we need to get our new mate from Parliament, Ben Obese-Jecty.
That's the one.
He could maybe, like, we need to get him involved in this plan.
Well,
so we could get it here
space.
In the UK too. I'm not sure how that would align with his own political values, but maybe we should have a conversation.
We can lobby him.
Let's lobby him.
Now,
let's lobby
him. Moving on. We talked at the start of this show about Strade Bianche and a new rivalry that you all need to know about. So on the one hand, we've got the world number one, Demi Vollering, who's been dogged with team politics issues for the last couple of years and seems to have laid that to rest in her new FDJ Suez squad with some big wins already in the bank this year.
But the interesting thing is that former world number one, Anna van der Breggen, who retired in 2021 to become team director and also a coach to Demi Vollering at Vollering's previous team, has now come out of retirement and is challenging for victories.
Challenging her for victories, isn't
she?
Because she pushed Vollering quite hard in Strade Bianche on Saturday. I can't wait to see what happens as this season unfolds and she gets more racing in her legs.
Yeah.
It's going to improve, isn't she?
Oh my goodness, this is the rivalry that we're crying out for at the minute. Yeah, it was a particularly sketchy edition of Strade Bianche, wasn't it? Yeah, because it wasn't just Pogacar's crash. Third place woman, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, also making a comeback to road racing. She went down, didn't she?
Quite hard, yeah.
Kashi Niewiadoma, her Instagram post makes for uncomfortable viewing, doesn't it? In the men's race alone, we think there were at least 5 riders who suffered broken bones.
Wow, were there that many?
Yeah, I think there were 3 collarbones and 2 wrists.
Oh.
Oh, God.
It seemed like it wasn't the gravel sectors, though, but the dusty tarmac in between that was so lethal, most of them crashing on the tarmac. Anyway, there's now just 2 weeks before Milano-San Remo. There's a women's race this year.
Yes.
So hopefully most riders will be back to form before then.
Yes, and also doing a bit better on tarmac as well. Now, one final bit of Strade Bianche news. While Tadej was impressively riding back from Thornbush to podium, winning the fastest ever edition, has to be said, it turns out that he was unable to beat Daniel Lloyd to the highly prestigious 5th place in a Strava segment via Santa Catarina, the final climb up to the line where remarkably, Dan is still 5th on Strava. Unbelievable. I mean, how did you go up so fast in 2009? Were you holding on to the team car?
I could have. Oh, no, I couldn't have been because team cars aren't allowed up that climb.
Good point.
It's so narrow. Was it the final climb?
I'm pretty sure it's the final climb.
I'm sure some of the viewers... We'll put a link in the description below to the Strava segment. The viewers can tell us.
I mean, on your Strava from Strada Bianca, you forgot to press stop after the finish. So we can see where Dan's team bus was parked.
Yeah. I mean, the way that race is raced has changed quite significantly. At the time, it was seen as the Italian version of Paris-Roubaix. And as such, riders sent their Roubaix riders who were like 80 kilos plus rather than climbers. So obviously, they've made it harder over the years and longer. So it's all climbers doing well now. I think the other point worth mentioning is that normally by that point in the race, Poggi's just basically trying to figure out how he's going to post up and celebrate at the finish rather than going as hard as he can up the climb, isn't he?
Well, maybe if you're watching this, Teddy, you could just quickly nip back to Siena and do like a full gas effort up the Via Santa Caterina.
See how far behind he is.
Yeah, just to see. Yeah. I mean, could he get top 12 in a Zwift race, Dan? I'm not sure.
Well, certainly not in a C category.
No, crikey. Absolutely not. Oh, sorry. Right, just moving on. A couple of promotions from GCN HQ here. First up, we got some new GCN T-shirts in our collection, one of which Dan is sporting here. Dan's also, we should say, gone up a T-shirt size, haven't we, after all the gym work?
Well, large was the only option.
Yeah, but look at you. It looks like perfect.
It's got a bulldog clip at the back. Sort of. No. I think I fit in a large now.
I think you do. Not quite. I think you do, mate, yeah. Now, we've got a couple of new ones to choose from. So this one, sort of celebrating March time in Tuscany,
yep. We
should say. There is another one coming up, the Primavera, isn't it? That's an absolute banger. You can see it on screen now. We unfortunately don't have one in the studio with us. But anyway, if you want to have a look, either for yourself or for someone else, head to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com.
And we should probably remind everyone, any purchase that you make helps us to continue making the free-to-view content right here on YouTube. So it's massively, massively appreciated.
Absolutely.
Then secondly, as mentioned earlier, a few times in the end actually, we're hosting the Zwift Games this year. And the second of the 3 days racing is this Saturday at 1700 GMT. You can find that over on our GCN Racing YouTube channel. And yeah, there's quite a few riders. The aforementioned Ailey Gardner, Ollie Jones, Jason Osborne, and plenty of other hitters.
Lucy Charles Barkley.
Oh, yes. Well, spoiler alert, she won one of the rounds last Saturday.
I think we're all right.
It's a few days past that, isn't it? Yeah, some incredible power to weight ratios going on there.
Yeah.
It's mental.
Can we just say as well that it's free to view? Unlike a lot of racing.
That is a good way to promote things these days, isn't
it? Well, absolutely. Well, you know, it's kind of worth showing your support, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'll leave that with you.
Coming up next, it is hack /bodge of the week.
Yes, the first one, excitingly, we have here in real life.
I've not seen it.
In the studio. No, you haven't. So this has been sent in by Jeff Schakowsky, and it's for you, Dan.
Crikey.
Yeah, a present live on the GCN show from Jeff to you.
I'm looking at a picture of it, and now it's here. I've never.
No, you haven't seen a picture of it.
Oh, there's no picture of it either. I'm looking at the next one. Hack. It's got to be a hack already.
I think it is a hack, yeah.
Present sent to me. What do we have here then? Vincent van Gogh. Today is Art Day. Figurine.
Yes. So...
And this, I presume, looking through the box, is supposed to look like me. I don't know if we can zoom in on that.
Well, you can zoom in.
Oh, the back.
It's a...
I can see the resemblance. The very long nose, isn't it?
So Jeff spotted Vincent van Gogh and thought, oh my goodness, that's like a ginger Dan Lloyd. There you go. We now have Vincent in the GCN Mega Bay Studios. We can maybe get like a felt tip out and just colour the hair in.
Yeah, so it's less ginger.
Or we just leave it as like, this is what Dan would look like.
I'd like to know why this is 14 plus as a rating.
That's a good point. I mean, he probably got up to some stuff, didn't he, old Vincent?
Yeah, now I can see the resemblance. Are you going hack or bodge for that?
Oh, 100% hack. Okay. I mean, just the fact that Jeff sent this in is just amazing.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
I'm going hack as well.
Yeah, brilliant. There we go.
Oh, that was great. We've never had a hack and bodge sent directly in for us to...
No, we can have an unboxing later, can't we, as well?
Yep. Next up, this from Dugundum... Dougal Numpty, sorry, it was on two lines. Seen parked here in Padstow, two old plastic drums with the bottoms cut off. The sharp edges then lined with old hose pipe. Screw top acts as a drain hole. Great upcycling panniers hack.
That is actually really impressive. We should say Padstow is a very nice seaside town here in the UK. Very wet as well. So actually, drain hole's probably perfect. I mean, that's absolutely fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm all in for that.
They've done a good job, I must admit.
I mean, they have, haven't they? What an awesome hack.
Yeah.
Complete with reflective bits.
That is great.
Yeah.
For me as well.
Yeah, all in for that one. Next up, this one from Alistair N. Rear gear cable snapped before a brutal climb. One we know very well, actually. Just before arriving, says Alistair, at the dreaded Hard Knot Pass, I realised I could not get into my granny gear, so forced the shifter a bit too hard, which snapped my rear gear cable in the frame. I was left with the derailleur resting in the smallest sprocket. Got talking to a nice mountaineer who had some experience in bodges, and between us, we managed to grab some of the old cable, put it in enough tension to keep me in the 27-tooth sprocket, tied it around the hanger to keep it in place. So there you go.
Yeah.
And he even got 20 miles home after that.
Who had some experience in bodges or in hacks? We should decide. I mean, there's a neat way of doing it, isn't there?
There is.
If you look on the channel.
Yep. But, I mean, that is a roadside hack, isn't it?
It's a roadside hack.
Roadside
hack for me as well. Tam wrote in, said, a thread of my shoes broke this week, so I sellotaped the ends together while I waited for a free replacement part from Boa because I'm desperate to use them. The weather is going to be perfect for a bike ride this weekend. I can't actually see the sellotape.
Well, it's there, isn't it, on the left-hand shoe. Presumably, you can't tighten it because it would just pull straight out. But I guess
if... Oh, I see. I thought that was a part of the shoe then. I see what you're looking at.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, maybe it's just a hack.
Well, no, because like you said, the sellotape is never going to be strong enough to hold that part together.
No, you need a zip tie at least. No, not a chance. No, I mean, if it got you out on the bike... It's quite a cool looking pair of shoes, whatever.
I just don't see how the sellotape aids getting out on the bike. If it's not going to work, you just go out with them without the sellotape.
Well, there's two Boas on there, aren't there? We're going into a lot of detail. There are two Boas, so presumably, given that that one is only half of tightening half the shoe.
Oh, I see.
You could probably just get away with it, and it's just presumably stopping it flapping around.
I still don't see the need for the sellotape. It's just to stop it flapping around, is it?
Well, I mean, that would be my take on it.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm going to go bodge.
Yeah, bodge.
Just cut it off.
Just, tail bodge. Actually, that would stop it flapping around, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, there we go. One hack that we will have proudly on display in the studio.
Brilliant.
Thanks again, Jeff. And then finishing up with one bodge.
Oh, you can get involved in this part of the show, can't you? globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
Yeah, or just send it in. It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a very witty caption in the comments section down below this video and we'll pick a winner. Of course, it needs to relate to something, doesn't it? So we'll give you the photo in a moment after results.
First up, the photo. Yeah, the results from last week. This is the photo. Tom Pidcock and Wout van Aert, both with their Red Bull helmets on at the start of Omloop Het Nieuwsblad. Wout's is more visible, isn't it? Because it's an old Giro Era Head time trial helmet.
Yes.
With Red Bull plastered all over it. Anyway, the winner this week is George Ailes, 5801, who put, there's not much room in the peloton in these roads.
I'm not sure you've done that.
There's not much room in the peloton on these roads.
There we go.
Did I say much?
You did. You actually... yes, there's not mushroom in the peloton. Yeah, so...
it's all in the delivery.
That's it, with Wout van Aert looking absolutely like he's got a mushroom on his head. Yeah. Anyway, George, get in touch. We thought that was an absolute banger of a comment, even if it wasn't delivered quite so well in the
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, go on then, Dan. See if you can deliver your own caption.
Well, I'm a bit uncertain now. Anyway, this is this week's photo. It's Tim Melier, the European champion, after winning stage one of Paris-Nice and receiving the coveted yellow jersey, and with that, the cuddly toy lion that you get from ASO through Le Credit Lyonnais. So I'll get started. Don't know what you're smiling at, Tim. I'm lying to you.
Nice. That was better. That was better.
Yeah, it's my own caption.
Yeah.
It's slightly easier to deliver them.
It was, yeah. See whether you think you can beat Lloydie's caption. I suggest you probably can. Get involved in the comments section down below.
Shortly, we'll let you know what's coming up on GCN this week. We're going to start, as ever, with a few of our favourite comments from last week's worth of videos. And unashamedly, we're going to start with a few underneath the Zwift Academy final episode, because, we'll be honest with you, we're very proud of our efforts.
Yeah, and what we're particularly pleased with is the fact that so many of you seem to appreciate it as well.
Makes it all worthwhile.
It does, genuinely, doesn't it? Like, it's absolutely amazing. So thank you so much for those of you that's taken time to hit the like button or write us a comment or something. We have literally read them all, haven't we?
Yeah.
This one from Adam Kalari. Thanks, Dan, Si, all the GCN team, Zwift in particular, Canyon and everyone else making this possible. It was an amazing series. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
And an arrière du peloton wrote in saying, well done to the rider and to GCN. The level of content in both in terms of quality and production levels has really taken an uptick since you guys came back as independent. Keep up the great work. So thank you to both of you. And like Si said, everyone that viewed it, left a comment, left a like. It all means a lot to us.
Yeah. And big up to Zwift as well for running it. Was that the 9th or the 10th year?
Well, like I said, the first men's was in 2017, but the first women's was 2 or 3 years before.
Yeah,
yeah. So they have been doing it a long time now.
Yeah, they have. We were delighted as well to see how much you enjoyed the rider questionnaire from the UAE Tour that we put out this week as well. How many bikes does a pro cyclist actually own? You lot clearly love talking about other people's bike collections and your own as well. Hundreds of responses asking how many bikes you had.
I was out there asking all the hard-hitting questions.
You were. Yeah, absolutely, mate.
They were all scurrying away thinking, what's he going to ask me next?
Yeah.
Well, the answer to that is handlebar width, crank length and best and worst parts of being a pro.
There you go. We also had a chuckle under Hank's solo riding video to this comment from Craig Hunter. Hank gets married, then makes a video about needing to be at peace and alone with his thoughts. Relatable content at its finest. I did have a chuckle.
Yeah. Also, Larry T. Thugley. Oh, sorry, this is underneath last week's show. I've skipped
it is,
a bit.
Yeah, you have skipped a bit.
I've skipped more than a little bit.
Yeah, you have.
So underneath last week's show, getting back on track, first up, this one from Chris Roper said, there's no such thing as going too far in the quest for speed. There are, however, definitely mistakes in the quest for speed. Those helmets are a mistake.
Yes. Larry T at Cycle Italia said, fugly, but air doesn't care. So it's up to the UCI to rein this crap in, starting with those god-awful chrono fairings stuck on the heads of the Visma riders. How long before they come up with a nose cone setup that covers the riders' shoulders? I mean, they pretty much have done, haven't they?
Yeah, but then they aren't allowed fairings, are they?
Yeah, although I think this one from Skullux, we thought this was quite telling.
Yeah.
People looking in on cycling have a hard time getting past spandex. They're not going to be taken aback by the nuanced differences in helmet shapes. I'm sure they think they're all the same.
That's not a bad point, is it?
Yeah, very, very.
I'm going on with that.
Valid point.
Dr. Scoot said, I'm going to defend size jeans. Cool distressed denim is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's distressed and distressed.
No, because underneath that, C. Gruthius said, yeah, they always look good on him. Catherine Brennan then said, agreed, denim is supposed to look worn in and Si isn't presenting from the Oval Office.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Although, did you see the one from Ian Perkins?
Yes, I did. I think that was meant for me as well.
I've travelled throughout the world and used many hotels of different standards, but one thing that I found a staple of these locations is an iron. Definitely pointed at you, Si. So if we're going to talk about ugliness or appearance, perhaps we need to use an iron, not a cold mess tin. You should have seen a T-shirt he had on earlier on today in the office. I mean, it was next level unironed.
I found it in the bottom of my locker. I was like, oh, I haven't seen that for a few months. So I popped it on.
I honestly don't think I could... If you asked me to make a T-shirt as creased as I possibly could, I don't think I could make it as creased as that one was.
But we've all seen your underpants draw, Dan. We know why you can't crease them up. You take time and effort over every item of clothing.
I do, yeah.
Including your bib shorts.
I do.
Anyway, I'm envious of that. I genuinely am.
Right then, what's coming up on the channel this week? On Wednesday, what the best and worst parts of being a pro rider? Another one of my hard-hitting questions from the UAE tours. And on Thursday, I don't know how much we can reveal about this.
Not much, just to say...
I was out on a ride.
Dan was out on a ride.
With Connor.
That bit's not under embargo. Riding a top secret new bike, which is released on Thursday. That's very exciting, isn't it? And then on Friday, Connor caught up with Christoph de Kegel if you've been watching Drift Academy, you will know he is one half of the Alps Indekernik coaches. He is the sports scientist and the performance-oriented member of that team. Well, one of them, I suppose you should say, probably. But anyway, so we've got a super cool, fascinating interview with Christoph, which I cannot wait to watch personally. And then on Sunday, sticking with the training theme, we think we found the hardest training session in the World Tour. So we tried to do it. So you can check out how we got on Sunday.
I witnessed how they get on. Won't say too much. Also, one other piece of content that came out last week, most of you probably haven't watched just yet because it was over on GCN Italia. So Alain Marangoni interviewed a legend of the sport who goes by the name of Francesco Moser. Most of you would have heard of him because, like I said, he's an absolute legend. It's supposed to be a really great piece of content. There's a lot of buzz around the office about it early on this morning. So when I get home tonight, it's going to be the first thing I watch.
Yeah, worth watching with subtitles on if you can't speak Italian. That's kind of what we're saying, isn't it?
Great stuff.
Yeah, man.
Right, that is all for this week. We'll be back again next week for episode 636.
Wow. I have a feeling that's going to be a banger. Pre-Milan San Remo.
Yep.
Greatest race of the year.
Post-Paris-Nice, post-Torino.
That's it. Yep. Join us next week.